There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Okay, let's do this. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Wednesday. Glad to have you here. A lot coming up in the next hour, and I'd love to hear from you on the text line at 343-0106. A lot of Baldwin County politics in our discussion, and also recovery from Hurricane Sally. So that's coming up in this hour. First, I want to check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And, you know, we're always talking about... you buying there, right? So we've got, you know, if we're going to sell something, well, then you're a buyer, right? We're always kind of thinking about buying stuff from y'all, but y'all are also a buyer of our stuff.
We certainly are. We've had a lot of people come in and they want that free appraisal. Maybe they've got grandpa's coin collection, maybe grandma's jewelry, and they just want to know if the stuff is really worth something. You know, maybe it's not quite worth what grandpa thought, but it's got some value to it. So they'll bring it in, we'll go through the items, we'll give them a quick appraisal and everything. And then invariably, the next question is, well, I want to go ahead and sell it. What do I do? And it's real simple. That price we're giving you right then and there is the price that we're willing to pay for it. This is not some pie-in-the-sky appraisal number. This is a real-world, on-the-countertop number, what we're willing to buy that stuff from you for.
That's good because, I mean, it's not, like you said, theoretical. But if we choose not to sell it to y'all for that, we now know what the real-world value of that is, whether we inherited something or, you know, something was handed down to it. We've got that thing. We now know what it's worth.
Well, that's very, very important because, gosh knows, we all have that relative that had this rare, special thing that was worth $100,000, and then after he's gone, we found out it was junk. You know, and maybe he wasn't being malicious. Maybe Grandpa or Uncle Joe was being funny with what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But it can really mess the family up a little bit when they do that. So we're going to give you a real, honest, straightforward, real evaluation of what those items are actually worth.
All right. Tell folks how to come find you.
We're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. And if you want to see some of the new stuff as it is coming into the shop, like and follow us on Instagram or on Facebook.
Very good. Angelo, we'll see you soon.
Have a good one, Sean.
All right, there he is. You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And mentioned, too, that we talk a lot of Baldwin County politics this hour, but we'll balance that with, even though Baldwin County people are welcome, some Mobile County entertainment and some upcoming shows at the Sanger Theater. Always fun to get to talk to my friend Mary Lee Gay, Senior Marketing Director at ASM Global, and the Sanger movie series in October. What's going on, Mary Lee?
I mean, isn't it fun that we're actually having events again to talk about?
Right, because usually we talk about this for people. This is usually a thing we do in the summertime, right?
Yes. And we actually tried to do it in the summer. I came and talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we announced it, things were going pretty well. And shortly afterwards, things started going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And numbers were going up. And we decided, you know, it's just not the best thing to do. So we postponed it. But we are very excited to welcome people back to the Sanger after 6.5 long months.
Wow.
Starting tomorrow night at 7 p.m. for the 2020 movie series.
Now, so, let's talk about your leadoff batter, this movie. This is one that'll get me in.
I mean, one of the most quotable movies of all time and one of my favorites, Airplane. If you don't like that movie, at least doesn't make you giggle a little bit. I don't know what will, but that's, you know, one of my favorites. But we start off with that, but we've got a little bit of everything. Some of the classics, some newer things, some 80s classics, a few things for the kids, and just all sorts of stuff. So it runs through November 22nd, and we'll have movies on Sunday afternoons and Thursday night.
Now, so, one of the things people say, and this, I want to put this in because I've seen Airplane many times, and I love that movie. For that one, for example, I was not of the age that I was allowed to see it at the movie theater. You see what I'm saying? So for me, this would be the first time seeing it on a big screen.
Same with me. I've seen it thousands of times at home and know pretty much every word, but have never seen it in a movie theater. So I'm pretty excited about that.
So people can go through this list, whether it's a movie for the whole family or for the grown-ups or something like that. Maybe something you've seen before, you love this thing, but have you ever seen it on the big screen? And that's what you got to ask yourself.
A nearly 100-year-old historic theater, too.
True. You've got that going for. How does it, and what do people need to, first of all, go online, go to Mobile Sanger website?
You can go to mobilesanger.com to check out the full schedule and showtime. And then if you want to get tickets, you can get them anytime, Monday through Friday at the Mobile Civic Center box office. But on movie days, the Sanger box office will be open.
Well, you answered my question. So you can walk up, and buy tickets there.
Yes, you can. We are limiting tickets to 600 people per movie because of social distancing and all that fun stuff, but you should be able to walk up with no problem.
All right, this is good, and I'll remind you all of this, but my favorite of the whole list is tomorrow night, so y'all want to check out Airplane tomorrow night. You got to get your tickets now, and Mary Lee, thank you for doing this. Even if it's 6 months delayed, we appreciate y'all's work.
Thank you, and one more thing, everybody downtown, the businesses, the restaurants, they've all been hit really hard, so if you can stop by and have a snack or a beverage with them before you come over to the movies, we would want to support them as well. So.
Well said. No, well said, absolutely. Think about those folks that are family and friends and, co-workers, local business is what makes it move. Mary Lee, thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay, thanks, Sean.
Right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. State Rep Steve McMillan joins us. Lots to talk about with him, and coming up in the second half of the hour, the Monday morning quarterback, at least it sounds like that's what the governor called him. State Senator Chris Elliott joins us as well.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, we continue here, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. And we also continue to keep our eyes on the recovery from Hurricane Sally, which, for some people, that's nothing but a pile of limbs out on the street. For some people, they don't have a home anymore, or they have big damage to that home and trying to navigate this. And so we're not going to forget about that, and we're going to continue to keep our eyes on that for folks in Mobile County to some degree, but a lot of folks in Baldwin County, and actually south end of Baldwin County, the hardest hit. And let's talk to Representative Steve McMillan, representative for the 95th District of Alabama, right down there, which I would say would be Representative Ground Zero for Hurricane Sally.
Just about, if you go down to the island and look from one end to the other, it's amazing. It was a tree storm, no doubt.
Well, it was one that, ramped up as it came on shore. It caught a lot of people. It's not like people were ignorant, but people just thought this storm was going in further to the west. And I think that led to the trees couldn't be helped, but some of the things that weren't secured and put up, I think that's people thought we had a Category 1 storm going into Mississippi,
I think a lot of boats would have gone up the rivers and tried to get in sheltered locations had they had a little warning.
Wait, let's talk about that portion, too, that people have seen these photographs that have not been down there about the boat damage there. And we have talked to Mayor Kennan from Orange Beach, who told me at some point it was 570-some-odd boats that were scattered in the water and the land after that storm. That's a really big deal, not only to the individual owners, but to getting those things picked up and put back in the water or finding who they belong to.
It's going to be a huge undertaking, and fortunately we have passed a law that will give us some guidance on how to go about it. It sets up a process by which the various boats have been vacated and left in one place or in poor condition. That's what happens a lot of times, is it's in such condition it costs the owner more to retrieve them than it did to, that they would be worth. So you run into a problem of owners that, and some of them out of state, that just don't have an interest in trying to retrieve them.
And that's, you know, when you and I started talking about this, I hadn't thought about it. I was like, you know, people are going to be out there looking for their boats, trying to find their boats. But I guess for some people out there, like you said, if it costs more to remove the boat or get it back, you know, than it does to the boat's worth, they just leave them.
Yes, sir. That's what happens. We've been fortunate. We've got a couple, well, several locations that have been identified by the Marine Police, law enforcement, that need to be removed, but there's really not a process for that unless the funds are appropriated. At this point, there's a process in the derelict boat legislation that allows some of the fees and so forth to be applied to the derelict boat fund if there are fees from the sale of these boats for those that the owners no longer have an interest in.
So that money would go, there'd be an auction or something of these boats?
Auction. Part of the process is a judicial proceeding. We can't just let one of the state agencies, be it conservation or law enforcement, go out and do whatever they'd like to do with them. They have to be advertised and notified, if the owners can be notified. Because with the boats not being registered in Alabama, oftentimes you can't find, it's very difficult to find out who the owners are. So that creates another problem.
But for in-state boats, right? So having a couple of these hanging around, these boats, I've got a whole number, right? My Alabama number, as well as a whole number, like a VIN number on that boat, so it could be checked and cross-referenced, I guess. But you're saying
that's right. If it's still on the boat.
Right, if those, if you know, the AL, you know, 1234 blah 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 dash BZ or whatever it is, there will they go through that number and then go to the registration and say, hey, Mr. Smith, we found your boat up in a pine tree, or I mean,
yeah, that's probably would be the beginning of the process, and then it depends on how long the boat has been there unattended. There's several types of categories that would have to be met. I think one of them was a 10-day procedure, and one of them was 30 as far as the boats being vacated left in one place.
Okay, so that was what I was wondering. People are asking, is that that's the window, like where the owner needs to have claimed that boat? That's when this starts?
That's right.
Also, I want to check in, and we're talking about the boats. What about District 95 and recovery from week to week? Obviously, it's getting better and better, but what's the lay of the land down there now? How about your house, too? You live in Foley. How'd you fare?
I was very fortunate. One of my backyard neighbors had a pine tree that fell in my yard but did no damage at all, and it was removed yesterday. So I'm in pretty good shape, thank the Lord.
Now, in 95, in District 95, I mean, what are your major... I mean, what do you have to cry? Is it, I mean, are we beyond ice and water and those kind of things and generators? And what are we at now?
The areas, the distribution points that I've been to, they have been, appear to have been removed because the tents and everything are gone, and then no supplies still left on site.
So what are your folks needing
the
now?
Is the big thing right now, and traffic. Every afternoon, it's two cars bumper to bumper, two lanes from County Road 12 north to the entrance to Owa off of the Beach Express, which I haven't clocked it, but it's probably well over a mile.
So
and in the morning it's going down, and in the afternoon going home.
So that traffic is coming, that additional traffic, is that from people working cleanup or working rebuild, or is that the folks down there coming and going more?
Above, I would imagine, because if you look at a lot of the vehicles are trucks that have the name of the business on the side, so you can get some idea of who's local and who's not.
So that could last a long time. I mean, it's not going to be all fixed up in a week's time.
Could be a real long time. It's kind of interesting. I was thinking about it the morning after the storm moved through, that the generators and the chainsaws. Those were the two prominent things that made their presence known.
you can hear those.
As we construct, there'll be nails in the tires. So people can anticipate that with all the construction and nails from the debris that's loaded.
So what is squeezing down the roadways, though, is still, I mean, debris pickup, has there been the big debris pickup going on yet, or are you just...
Oh, yeah, a lot's going on, a whole lot of debris pickup. I'm in Baymanette right now, and they've got the same thing going here. They pretty much, their first priority here was to clear the street rights away so they could get the debris trucks in. And they did a good job on it with the city crews.
I'm talking with Representative Steve McMillan, District 95. I want to switch gears here from specifically just District 95 to a discussion that is one that, well, people said this is a discussion that has, you know, some of its footing in Baldwin County, but has implications all over the state of Alabama, and that is a landmark district. Now, I've mentioned this before on the show, but I got to get re-educated on this. What, Representative McMillan, what is a landmark district? What does that mean?
It initially started out with an emphasis on history and historical preservation. This first one was done in Stockton. There basically are three ways to annex property into a municipality. One is by general law, one is by local law, and one is by unanimous consent of the property owners who request that they be annexed. This just deals with the local law aspect of annexation, and it just basically prohibits annexation to a municipality by an act of the legislature in a local bill.
Okay, let's put that in Sullivanese here.
The other stuff will stay the same, all the other processes. The only thing it does is prohibit the legislative delegation of any particular district from, I call it force in quotes, annexation, where it would be against the property owner's desire, but the legislature went on and did it for one reason or another.
When you talk about legislative delegation, is that at a county commission level? Is that at a city council level?
The state legislature.
Okay. So has there been an example of this where the state legislature would vote on something that says, hey, we're going to annex Barnwell into Fairhope?
Could legislators outside the area?
Yeah.
Could if they wanted to, because once it's introduced and passed, it becomes an act of the legislature. And with constitutional amendments, you have to have a unanimous vote. Interestingly enough, the first one that was created in Stockton wound up being a statewide vote because there was a vote against it in the legislative process.
So when this shows up on the ballot, when people are looking at this, but to create... creating landmark districts gives that protection you're talking about. Do I have the language right there?
It protected from the legislative delegation. They're the only ones that would have the authority to pass legislation that would force an area into the municipality against the will of the persons that live in that area.
Okay, so if somebody sees that and it says yes or no, I don't know what the, I don't have the, it in front of me right now, the language, but if it says to say yes or no, yes means to create these landmark districts for that protection. Is that?
That's right.
Okay. Because, you know, sometimes it's confusing.
I can read you what's going to be
sure.
A ballot question.
Sure.
Local amendment number 3 relating to Baldwin County, proposing an amendment to the Constitution of Alabama of 1901 to define the Rosington Landmark District within the county and to prohibit the annexation of, by local law of any property within the district into any municipality except under certain conditions.
So somebody who wanted that protection, who believed in that, would vote yes?
That's correct.
Okay. Because, you know, Representative, sometimes it is confusing for us looking at amendments and how they're worded.
Oh, absolutely. And I can explain some of that. We can do it now or later, but we passed a legislation several years ago that created a fair ballot commission comprised of some attorneys, but it intended it be a citizen-driven process. And they, in layman's language, describe what would happen to any particular piece of legislation. If you vote yes, this happens. Mm-hmm. If you vote no, this happens. Now, that explanation is not on the ballot for local constitution amendments, but for statewide constitution amendments, it's on every ballot. And usually it's on the back of the ballot. So I would encourage people to turn the ballot over and be sure and vote on those amendments on the back.
Sure. And I tell you what, we will have you back as we get closer to Election Day, because that's something I've always done, is I go through at least the ballots from Mobile and Baldwin County and put it in, you know, language I can understand. So I hope you'll help us at that point.
Be happy to.
All right. State Representative Steve McMillan, thanks for the time, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Check it in the south end of Baldwin County. We'll be checking in with State Senator Chris Elliott from that same neighborhood. Coming up next, the quarterback. Well, we'll get more on that in a second.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. It's my buddy Trey, doing great work in Mobile and Baldwin counties. You got junk, you need it gone. He's got the crew to do it. And the process is pretty darn easy as well. Online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And then they pick a day that works for y'all, works for them. Y'all, in other words, you agree. And they set a window here, they show up. They quote you a price on the job, and you say yes, they get to work and get it done. I mean, it's like that easy. We've used them at home and in the office here, and that's one thing. It could be your home. It could be a storage unit. It could be a house you're getting ready to sell. It could be a shop you want to get junk moved out of. Listen, if you've got junk, you just want it out of your way. Trey gets it. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's why you see their trucks all over Mobile and Baldwin counties, because other people feel just like you do and I do. So check them out online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or just pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, so earlier today in 11 o'clock hour, and it was streaming on our Facebook page, Governor Ivey had another presser here, a mask order presser, you know, where Governor comes on and talks, and then State Health Officer Harris comes on and he talks as well. And then they take questions from the media about the extension of the Safer at Home extended edition order here. So in other words, you're still masking up at least through November, and then there'll be another presser like this in November, and we'll see what happens then. There were a few adjustments to this, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow. I thought what was good is giving some liberty. I wish it was more, but giving some liberty to having people be able to visit loved ones in assisted living facilities or in the hospital, I think that was good. But it also, you get Q&A and you get questions from the media during these pressers where the governor, this is like one of the few times we get to hear from the governor, and she speaks and the media asks her questions. And this is part of what was going on. Questions coming in to Governor Ivey surrounding recovery down here at our neck of the woods. And we'll do this. We'll just go ahead and run the clip here. Here's Governor Ivey from the 11 o'clock hour today. And see how this resonates with you.
Well, Rashad, you know that Monday morning quarterbacks have the easiest job in the world. They don't ever get the uniform dirty. They don't ever get hurt, injured themselves, because they never entered the game. But they're the quickest to tell you what should have been done and what they'd have done if they'd been in the game. I've been down there. I have met with the local leaders. We have promised them that we're going to work with our federal partners and our state leaders. We're doing that. We've promised them we'll not forget them, and we're not doing that. So we're staying true to what we said we would do. We've already started an internal review that will help us know what we did well, what we could have done better, and lessons learned. So let's just say that we appreciate the constructive comments that have been coming from folks down there. And I'm just sorry that one of the senators was too busy to visit with me when I was in his district to meet with me and other leaders who gathered.
All right. So there's a little bit of that pressure, but it means a lot to us here in South Alabama. So I'm going to make a guess here, and we'll see. Governor didn't use a name, but did talk about Monday morning quarterbacking. We've heard about the no griping coming from the governor's office, that you shouldn't be griping if you are a leader down in South Alabama. And specifically, she narrowed it down to a state senator. So I'm going to spin the wheel here and guess that might be State Senator Chris Elliott, who joins us right now on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on, Sean.
All right. So, she didn't use your name, but she left very little to the imagination on who she was talking about. So the governor, I feel, called you out directly.
Well, I think so, too, and that's okay. I mean, I don't have a problem having this conversation at all. I just think it's so disappointing that this governor is reacting this way to even the slightest situation that something wasn't going right in the response. You know, to characterize this as Monday morning quarterbacking, look, she's got one thing right. It was Monday when I was called to the Emergency Operations Center by local elected officials who were worried that they are not getting the supplies that had been requested and asking for my help. And that's my job as their state senator, is to represent them and make sure they get the resources they need from the state. To suggest that, my jersey's not dirty. Look, Sean, you've done this. You know what this is like. I've been muddy for the last couple of weeks. We got tree limbs down all over the place, houses flooded, including, my personal property strewn all about. I've been running a chainsaw and heck, had one conference call with the governor's office while I was standing in waist-deep floodwater down in Josephine.
So with that being said, so the governor, what you're telling me, is aware of how dirty the jersey would be, but decides to talk about Monday morning quarterbacks that don't actually play the game. Do you feel like you've been in the game? You've been playing?
In the Emergency Operations Center at the request of the local elected, on the ground with the lieutenant governor who came down and met with folks with me that was scheduled way ahead of time to meet with farmers, to meet with business people, to meet with individuals on their property where they had actually been impacted, as opposed to jetting into Gulf Shores on the state jet and having a sterile photo op with a few other folks down there, and then choppering over to Dolphin Island before you jet back to Montgomery. She may have thought that this game was over on Friday, but it's not. It wasn't over on Friday. We still didn't have the resources that had been requested on Monday. And, Sean, it's not over now. We're still recovering, and we will for a while. And you ought to be able to have a reasonable conversation with this administration and say, hey, Governor, Mr. Emergency Management Coordinator, this is not going well in this particular area. Here's what's going well. Here's what's not going well. But instead, we get this type of response. You didn't come meet with me when I was here for a little while.
Yeah, let's address that. Because she says that specifically there at the end, the state senator, and she's talking about you, in my opinion. I don't think I'm stretching too much. Did you purposely, what, I'm not going to put it that, did you choose not to meet with the governor or not?
Look, the governor decided to come down to Baldwin County to see this damage after the lieutenant governor had already called me, scheduled meetings with other elected officials and individuals, and drove down here to do that. I had committed to him that I would introduce him to and show him around with some of my constituents. He did that well before the governor ever announced that she was coming down. And oh, by the way, the governor didn't call me and say she was coming down. I got an email from a staffer. The lieutenant governor picked up the phone and said, Chris, I want to see your district. I want to see what people are going through, and I want to help. And I'll be honest with you, while he was here, he was able to help one of our municipalities get some fuel they were having a hard time getting a hold of. I mean, just that type of on-the-ground, boots on the ground, getting the jersey dirty, as opposed to flying in on the jet and then flying right back out.
So you didn't, it was that the lieutenant governor had previously, before you got word from the governor's office, had said he was coming down and wanted to meet with you. That was already done before you ever got this email from the staffer.
Absolutely. And the governor's office had said in that conference call that I took while I was standing waist deep in floodwater that they'd bring the governor down here when they thought it was safe. The lieutenant governor was chomping at the bit to get on the ground. We determined that Friday would be the best time to do that, well before the governor ever indicated she was coming down here. And I appreciate her being here. Don't get me wrong. I do. It's just this attitude that this emergency is somehow or another over as soon as she leaves, and that any type of conversation after that is some type of post-game analysis when we're still on the field. We're still in the mud. We're still working it. It's hardly Monday morning quarterback. And to tell my local mayors and commissioners and other legislators, you know, that they don't want to hear any griping from them, and that, you know, and that any type of criticism is somehow or another inappropriate. I mean, that's really something when you've got folks that are suffering and trying to dig out from underneath this.
I want to kind of do a setting the scene for people that haven't followed this and hear us mentioning no griping in this. The response here, and I'm going to lay out what I know, and then you fill in the details or correct where I'm wrong. But before Hurricane Sally's impact, there were FEMA aid, there were supplies that were staged in Selma. And then it was days before that material arrived in places like South Baldwin County. Is that right? Is that correct?
That's correct. And okay. And my early analysis is that those supplies were requested and either throttled back by state EMA or simply not sent. Now, look,
now, what, okay.
Right, and to some extent, we need to go through an after action and figure out exactly what went wrong there. But the fact of the matter is, Sean, they didn't get sent. They weren't here. There were people that were hungry. There were people that needed tarps. And there were people that needed those supplies. Those supplies were in the state's custody by and large in Selma, from what we can tell at this point, and they simply weren't here. And in a Monday, to use that day just one more time, phone call with Director Brian Hastings, the EMA director, state EMA director, and I told him, I said, Brian, we've got to have that stuff here on the ground. It needs to come. It's been requested. People need it. The points of distribution around the county don't have the supplies that they need. And you know what? He started sending it that evening, and it started showing up the next day and the day after that. But only after the city of Gulf Shores had gone out and bought $30,000 worth of tarps with their own funds because the state couldn't get them here quick enough.
And
that's not how it's supposed to work.
And listen, our phone lines here and our text line and emails were full of people asking about, hey, where are the MREs, where are the tarps? And I, you know, for days said, I don't know. But they were, the way I understand it now, they were here in the state. They were sitting in Selma. Throttle back or not sending? Seems like same. Well, it could be the same thing. In other words, were there not trucks? I'm doing this very simply so I can understand it. Were there not trucks assigned to load this stuff up and drive south from Selma and come down to Baldwin County right after the storm? Were the trucks sitting there full and not rolling? What have you found out? What caused that problem?
What I heard from state EMA was that they didn't think we needed the supplies because our power was coming back on. And they thought we could resource or source those resources locally. So they didn't send it.
So, okay. First of all, who told them that, I mean, at what level, how much power has to be on to not need that? You know, where's the benchmark on that? And second of all, to what end if they just sent this on? I mean, why are they holding on to it? I mean, why wouldn't they get it there? It seems like politically, let me just, you know, if I'm elected official, I want to talk about it. I'm going to have a press conference. I'm sending all this to South Baldwin. Look at me. I'm sending this to Dauphin Island. Look at me. I've got these trucks rolling. We're out. I'm going to stay here until the last truck gets out of here.
Exactly. And as a former county commissioner who sat in that EOC and helped run that EOC in an emergency, you expect that when you call for help and when you have the governor and the EMA director here saying, let us know what you need and tell us what you need, that you expect that they will send that. But they made the determination that we didn't need it and accordingly didn't send it. I'm thankful that it finally got moving on late Monday afternoon, Monday evening, and got here Tuesday. But, Sean, that's way too late. And unfortunately, people, you know, people were hungry and people went without the tarps that they needed or had to source them elsewhere. It just didn't go as well as it should. there's time for that after action, but we have got to have an administration that doesn't get their feelings hurt whenever somebody says, hey, look, this part isn't going as well as it should be. And we've got to have an administration that understands that this emergency, this recovery is not over yet. We're not done with this. We're going to be digging out from underneath this for a while. So it's not some post-game wrap-up. We're still in it, and we're still working hard.
I wonder about this. I mean, other than the responsibility to serve all parts of our state, the same way I have no problem if this would have been, you know, a scenario where you had a tornado in another part of the state and we're getting those supplies up there, I'd want them there immediately. But the second part is, if I just want to look at it maybe cynically, the faster Baldwin County gets back rolling, the faster South Mobile County gets rolling, the faster the money comes rolling back into Montgomery, too.
You're absolutely right, and our beaches will be back open this weekend, and we'll be ready for visitors again. The landscape will look a little different in places, and we'll be ready to welcome folks back, and that money will start flowing into Montgomery coffers again. And look, I don't think any of this was malicious at all. Okay, I do think that the response to the questions, the plead for help, and the heavy-handed, coming down on local elected officials that are simply asking for the help that you promised is really pretty audacious.
And the no griping thing for people to understand, so that is that, listen, you're going to get what you get and don't fuss a bit, right? I mean, they don't want to hear from anybody at a local level saying anything about the state's response.
It's a pretty crummy attitude. Now, to be fair, that's something that came not from the governor herself, because she's not been at a lot of this or been involved in a lot of this. That came from her chief of staff and her deputy chief of staff. Remember, seven different times that we counted, Sean, that they said that. But, you know, that the governor, other than that Friday visit, hasn't been here to communicate with those local electeds. She wasn't here when the FEMA director was here. We had the president sit down, the Secretary of Agriculture, the other day. She wasn't here for that. So she may not just understand just how severe, you know, some of this is. I mean, look, we had over 22,000 structures affected by this storm. Early estimates are $350 million worth of damage. You know, people, almost 100 of them have lost their house completely. This is going to take a while. And if you're looking to the governor and the governor's office for empathy and, hey, we're here to help, boy, you sure are getting a different message.
Okay. Let me just ask you the question that a lot of people are bouncing around their heads. Is this still a hangover from the toll and the bridge? Is this still what we're seeing now, is this linked somehow to this relationship that seemed to truly come off the rails at that point, or do you think this is a one-off?
I don't know the answer to that. I will tell you that my relationship with the governor's office changed 180 degrees since the bridge debacle, and since I came out against the toll bridge. Just no question about it. Now, do I think that this overarching attitude is about that? Yeah, I think you could probably find the origins in that. But I think, moreover, this is just a small problem that ought to be able to be communicated to the governor of this state without this overreaction, this hurt feelings, this, you know, no griping type of thing. Let's just be grown-ups and understand everything's not going to go perfect, and we've all got a job to do. We need to pull together and make it happen.
So was there anything when you talked to the EMA director or anything that said next time this isn't going to happen? Was there, I mean, are you probably not even at that point in the conversation yet, I guess?
No, I told Director Hastings, I said, look, there'll be plenty of time for an after action on this and we can pick it apart. What we need to do is fix it now so that we can get it right going forward. Nobody expects that everything's going to go perfect and perfectly according to plan. That's unrealistic. But you have to be able to adapt and move in an emergency and even a recovery phase of a scenario like this. You cannot get your feelings hurt like the administration has when somebody simply says, hey, look, this isn't working the way it should. We need to adjust it so that we can get the materials and the equipment on ground that need to be here.
All right, just a another follow-up here before we wrap up, but you mentioned Secretary Perdue being down here. Did you hear anything from the Secretary that what do you want to tell Baldwin County farmers? Because I know I've had state, you know, Ag Commissioner Rick Paydon talking about it, and he was kind of waiting to see what happened with the feds. Did he telegraph anything?
He did. The Secretary was very, very supportive of Baldwin County farmers, met with many of them on their farms, again, boots on the ground as opposed to just popping in real quick. Spent a lot of time here in Baldwin County, met with farmers directly. You see, the Department of Agriculture pretty much handles the FEMA function, if you will, for farms, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So all of those farm damages really have to go through the Department of Agriculture. But, you know, to show those farmers that empathy directly, I think, was very important. And to say, look, I understand what you're going through. I understand what your cotton crop looks like right now. You know, I understand what happened to your pecan orchard. And we are going to bring to bear everything we can to help you through this.
All right. So hopefully that means some assistance for these farmers. Everything to bear means, you know, because people looking at no crop and no money to plant next year.
It's going to be a tough year. There's no doubt about that. On top of other issues of trade wars and low prices in the cattle market and everything like that, it really was nice to have the Secretary of Agriculture here. Somebody who clearly understands what's going on in agriculture across the board and making those people feel like somebody in government's paying attention to them. And I think that's very helpful.
All right. State Senator Chris Elliott, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on with us, and keep that chin strapped.
We're going to do it, Sean. You know, my job is to represent this district and do so fervently. I'm going to look out for my local elected officials, the business folks, and the farmers that are here, and I'm going to do it every single day. And if somebody in Montgomery doesn't like it, so be it.
There we go. All right. So an update from the person specifically called out by Governor Ivey today during that presser, State Senator Chris Elliott. All right. We're coming right back to wrap it up here on Midday Mobile.